You're listening to Ave Maria Radio 990 WDEO Ypsilanti, Detroit. The FCC requires us to reduce our power at sunset. For those affected by this change, we invite you to listen on the internet at AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining me. We're going to take time this hour to begin looking at a problem that has largely been ignored. The Washington Post had an extensive investigative report in Afghanistan, and the report made it clear that U.S. leaders have consistently lied to the American people about the progress and potential for success in Afghanistan. We're going to talk this over with Andrew Basevich, who is president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He's a veteran and colonel, retired colonel. He also has a book coming out called The Age of Illusions, How America Squandered Its Cold War Victory. We've talked to him before on at least one occasion regarding his book, America's War for the Greater Middle East. So Andrew's going to be joining us this hour. I'll also have a few comments, too, on my tendency, and I think the tendency of many conservative Christians, to give the benefit of the doubt to those in authority. And I'll recount a little bit of going back to my grammar school days about how that's been the case and why we should probably rethink this, because all human activity, the activity of us as persons, as individuals, but also our families, our communities, our businesses, and our nation, will find themselves under the judgment of the cross in some way. And we should probably do an act of examination of conscience, not only on ourselves, but on our nation. That's coming up in this hour, so stay with me. But right now, it's the news headlines.
Thank you, Al, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, December 17th. It's the Feast of St. John of Matha. And today's news is brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need. Learn more at visitingangels.com. Pope Francis has declared that the pontifical secret will no longer apply in cases of accusations and trials involving abusive minors or vulnerable persons, and in cases of possession of child pornography by clerics. The pontifical secret, also sometimes called the papal secrecy, is a rule of confidentiality protecting sensitive information regarding the governance of the universal church. It is similar to classified or confidential status common in companies or civil governments. In the new instructions, Pope Francis said the pontifical secret will also no longer bind those working in offices of the Roman Curia to confidentiality on other offenses if committed in conjunction with child abuse or child pornography. Witnesses, alleged victims, and the person who files the report are also not bound to obligations of silence. More on this story at AveMariaRadio.net. The House Rules Committee is meeting to set procedural guidelines for tomorrow's expected debate over the impeachment of President Trump. Opening the meeting, Massachusetts Democrat Jim McGovern called impeachment unfortunate, but said Trump's actions have prompted the rare action.
President Trump withheld congressionally approved aid to Ukraine, a partner under siege, not to fight corruption, but to extract a personal political favor.
McGovern argued that Trump put his personal interest above the national interest and said the House has a responsibility to act with urgency. Oklahoma Republican Tom Cole called it a sad time and said there's no legitimate reason to impeach Trump, and Georgia Representative Doug Collins says Democrats are rushing to get impeachment done before year's end.
Since January, when we were sworn in, it's about a clock and a calendar. Because if we went into the next year, it would be really too close, especially from the House's perspective, to the elections that they're trying to interfere with.
With your Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Dan McGraw.
And good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Unfortunately, lost in the relentless coverage of the impeachment hearings, what's been lost is a Washington Post finding that U.S. leaders have systematically lied to the American public about the progress and potential for success in Afghanistan. Joining me right now to discuss this is Andrew Basevich. He's president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft and author of the forthcoming book, The Age of Illusions, How America Squandered Its Cold War Victory. He's also author of America's War for the Greater Middle East. Andrew, thank you for joining me once again. It's good to talk with you.
Yes, good to be with you.
Let me just ask. Douglas Lute, a three-star general, told interviewers in 2015 that, quote, we were devoid of a fundamental understanding of Afghanistan. We didn't know what we were doing, end quote. That's pretty severe criticism. In your estimation, do we have a clear rationale for being in Afghanistan? And if so, are we succeeding? That's a big question. Let's start unpacking it.
Well, I mean, I think no, we don't. I mean, the fact that that three-star general that you quoted spent several years working on the National Security Council and was basically the Afghanistan czar, you know, the guy in the White House who was overseeing the war. If he admits that we don't have a plan and we don't know what we're doing, then that strikes me as pretty authoritative evidence.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Is there a big difference between the public disclosure about our involvement in Afghanistan and the internal objectives? That's the first thing I'd like to know, if there's a big difference.
I think we have to go back to the beginnings of the war in the fall of 2001.
Sure, go ahead.
There was, at that point, a very clear set of objectives. The purpose of the war was to punish the Taliban for having provided sanctuary to Al-Qaeda, and in that sense having allowed Al-Qaeda to plot the 9/11 attacks. And the purpose of the punishment was not simply to hurt the Taliban, but to send a strong signal to anyone who contemplated harboring anti-American terrorists that they too would undergo severe punishment. So, and I would suggest that that actually was probably a reasonable point of departure. The problem came when U.S. forces, with surprising ease, overthrew the Taliban regime, and the Bush administration, with various Western allies, immediately embarked upon a vast nation-building project that, in simple terms, was going to bring Afghanistan into modernity, was going to persuade Afghans to embrace Western values, and Afghanistan would become, the vision was, in fairly short order, a functioning, more or less liberal democracy. That was never going to happen. The conditions simply did not exist for that project to succeed. And when it didn't succeed, and we can blame here both the George W. Bush administration and the Obama administration, the people in charge, unwilling to acknowledge failure, simply allowed the war to persist.
Yeah.
You know, every couple of years there'd be a new general who would say, "Well, I have a plan. I'll turn things around." But that never happened, and so we end up with the longest war in our history, with long since having lost any sense of purpose, and you know, no real clear understanding of how we're going to end this mess.
I've got a number here: 157,000 lives that have been lost. Does that ring true? That's roughly triple what we lost in Vietnam.
That's not our lives. That's
lives overall.
Afghans.
Okay.
I don't remember the exact number of our U.S. troop deaths. It's something like 2,500. Probably another 3,000 American contractors killed, and something on the order of 20,000 wounded. And we should not sort of dismiss, you know, oh, well, he was just wounded.
Right.
Because many of those wounds are grievous and really life-shattering.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even get into the whole question of you know, after effects such as PTSD.
Right.
Or probably has cost us to this point $2 trillion. I say to this point because, of course, the bill continues to add up. So it has been immensely costly to us. Been immensely costly to the people of Afghanistan, and has to rank as one of the greatest foreign policy failures of our entire history. You know, there were years when Afghanistan was kind of lost in the shuffle,
right?
Because so much of the attention was given to Iraq. Now, in particular, I think because of the revelations of those papers published by the Washington Post, we can see more clearly the folly that has informed this war since almost the very beginning.
President Trump's talking about removing troops. Do you have any confidence that he'll be able to right the mistake that we've made?
No. Okay. You know, one of the things about the president, and I think the president is a disaster, but one of the particular characteristics of his presidency is big talk not followed up by effective action. So I guess it's more a rumor, I think, than a statement.
Okay.
That there's the possibility of an announcement of pulling out 4,000 U.S. troops out of Afghanistan. My attitude would be, well, let's wait and see if that actually happens. Remember that one of his campaign promises back in 2016 was that he would end the war.
Right.
At various times, he promised to win the war.
Yeah.
Well, he ain't going to win it. It may end because we do have to acknowledge the fact that there have been these fairly secretive talks going on between an American envoy, Zalmay Khalilzad, and the Taliban leadership. So that may bear fruit, but it very much remains to be seen.
What would victory even look like?
Well, I mean, again, I don't think it's. I mean, what would victory look like? It would be a pacified Afghanistan. That is to say, one in which there was only insignificant internal violence, and in which there was a government in Kabul that was legitimate. That is to say, it commanded the support and loyalty of the great majority of the Afghan people. Victory would include a functioning economy that was not basically built around
drugs,
opium production.
Right. Yeah.
None of those are going to occur. And again, it's worth reminding us that yes, fairly, we've been at this thing now for over 18 years. There is no evidence that things are getting better. There is an abundance of evidence that the Taliban is growing in strength, meaning that the war is not even going our way after all these years.
I guess when you see something like this, you ask, are there any, quote, lessons learned as a result of it? Are we even talking about...
I think the big lesson is the danger of naively imagining that we have the capacity to remake societies more or less in our own image,
right,
when those societies radically differ from ours in terms of culture,
right,
in terms of history, those factors were kind of washed away in our expectations of what we could do in it, just as they were washed away in our expectations of what we could do in Iraq,
right,
what we could do in Libya. So there's a profound American penchant toward wishful thinking in these matters, and that ends up costing us dearly, and it also ends up costing the people who we are supposedly liberating dearly.
I remember the arguments going into Iraq and the idea that somehow we were going to be able to bring them the kind of freedoms that we enjoy here, and that people who then raise the question, say, hey, wait a minute, you can't just go in there and kind of say, hey, you're all free now. Freedom, politically speaking, has a lot to do with the habits and dispositions of a people. You know, and it is shocking to me now, far removed from the war, it's shocking to me that argument didn't have any significant staying power within the Bush administration, who should have been, I mean, given the fact that he had many people who understood the important role that religion plays in culture, he had those people on staff, they should have known you can't just come in there and change people's set of assumptions.
Well, I think that, I mean, the question there would be who, and of course, Bush himself was and is a believer, and I think probably a pretty serious believer. But then we have to say, well, who did Bush listen to?
Right, right.
Who had his ear? And I think I would cite three people in particular.
Okay.
Vice President Cheney, Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, and Deputy Secretary of Defense Wolfowitz.
Okay.
I don't believe any of them really have an outlook that is informed by religious considerations. I don't pretend to know, you know, in a personal sense,
sure,
whether they're religious or not. But I think all three of them had a heightened expectation of what force could accomplish.
Yeah.
Force, you know,
sheer
US
power.
Force,
yeah.
American military might. And they also had this, they shared this, maybe not so much Rumsfeld, but certainly Wolfowitz, shared this sense that, you know, we are called upon to spread our version of freedom and democracy, and that people want it, and that the Afghans yearn to be free, with freedom defined the way we define freedom.
Right.
And that was obviously false. And there were people at the time warning that this was going to go badly, but those were not the people that the president was listening to.
Andrew, hold it there. We'll take a break, come back, and continue the conversation. My guest, Andrew Bacevich, we're looking at the disclosure from the Washington Post of our problems in Afghanistan and broadening the conversation to American involvement. Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Your Christmas will bless those who give and those who receive. But what about those in need? With Cross Catholic Outreach's Christmas catalog, your family can provide milk for hungry babies and a well to supply safe, clean water. Your family can also give the Box of Joy Outreach filled with toys, clothing, a rosary, and a gospel message. Learn more ways to bless the poor by visiting crosscatholic.org/Christmas. That's crosscatholic.org/Christmas.
Hey, Bill. I was looking at retiring soon, but I don't know what to do about filing for Social Security or what to do with my 401k.
Jim, you should call Joe Vitale at American Retirement Advisors. He helped us roll over a 401k to Catholic values-based investments, as well as helped us with our Social Security planning to maximize our benefit. You can give him a call at 855-756-5700 or go to his website at aradvisorsinc.com.
How you react often affects the outcome. Within weeks apart, two different men confronted me about two different issues, but both came from a place of anger. They made assumptions. Instead of asking what happened, they both attacked with hateful reactions. In one incident, the problem ended up being on the guy's end. He never apologized, but he did calm down. The other guy and I share a client. Upset about a PR promotion, he emailed both me and the client with vulgar expletives. He didn't ask what happened. He attacked us. In fact, he basically ignored our response and just stuck with his own assumptions. Neither of these situations started out from a place of love, peace, or Christ. They were hateful reactions. I've learned long ago that I cannot control others. I can only speak the truth and leave the rest up to God. We're all responsible for our own reactions. So before you react, ask yourself, am I coming from a place of love or hate? It will determine the outcome. This has been a Christ-Centered Communication message. I'm Vanessa Denhagarmo, a communications evangelist.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcha.
Stress is contagious, even for toddlers. A new study by the University of Cambridge found that even after controlling for temperament, the more stressed moms and dads felt, the more their toddlers tended to be clingy, tantruming, whiny, and defiant. In general, kids are terrific emotional barometers. Little ones especially are always taking their emotional cues from us, even when we think we're keeping it to ourselves. Parents' stress plays out in our facial expressions, our posture, our attitudes, and our ability to pay attention, all things our kids attend to closely. When our kids notice us feeling stressed, it makes them feel unsafe and causes them to act out. If your little one seems off, a good first step is asking yourself how you're managing your own stress level. An ounce of self-care can sometimes be worth a pound of discipline. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Fed.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
As this month of December winds down, so does 2019 and yet another decade as well. Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, and I invite you to slow down, take a deep breath, and reflect on all the blessings we enjoyed as we celebrate Jesus' birth this Christmas season. We're celebrating during our Big Finish sales event through the end of the year with Employee Pricing Plus on all new vehicles. In most cases, this is a savings of $7,000 to $10,000. Merry Christmas from your family at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Andrew Basevich, president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft and author of the forthcoming book, Age of Illusions, How America Squandered Its Cold War Victory. He's also author of America's War for the Greater Middle East. I guess one of the frustrations a lot of baby boomers have is remembering that we were the good guys during the Cold War. And the assumption that we won the Cold War then meant that we might be able to help other areas of the world have freedom and prosperity. I'm speaking very broadly here, is there anything the United States can do to actually help nations experience the same degree of freedom and prosperity that we've had?
Well, I think the first thing we ought to do is to revisit what you just mentioned as the commonplace interpretation of the Cold War.
Sure, go ahead.
I think at this point we should recognize that we didn't so much win the Cold War as we endured it and managed to escape without creating greater havoc than we already did. It was a tragedy. The end of the Cold War should have caused not celebration but repentance, and I mean that quite seriously.
Yeah, please elaborate.
When you think about the evil that occurred during the Cold War, and I'm not for a second am I suggesting that somehow the evil done was uniquely done by us. The other side engaged in a vast number of reprehensible acts.
Mm-hmm.
But we should have come out of the Cold War chastened rather than thinking that the way ahead was now clear for us to, quote-unquote, spread freedom at what was then referred to as the end of history.
Right.
So I think we should be more modest. We should be more modest in our belief that we have the capacity to understand other societies, and modest in our expectation of what we can do to bring salvation to them.
Right, right.
That said, when there is suffering, we have some capacity to alleviate suffering. There is a tendency in some quarters to say, well, the first thing you do to alleviate suffering is to send in U.S. forces. I'm not sure that that's always the right way to go. Sometimes it's, tending to the wounds, to the suffering of refugees. That doesn't produce, decisive outcomes. It doesn't fix broken societies. But I think by now we should realize that we really have a very limited capacity to fix broken societies. I mean, heck, ours is, in many respects, a broken society.
Sure.
And when you think about the crises that afflict America today.
Incarceration rates are very high here.
Well, incarceration rates, the opioid problem.
Right.
I mean, one could go on and on and on. And even though we are rich, we find very difficult to address these afflictions that our fellow citizens suffer from. So why the heck do we think we can, you know, appear in some place like Afghanistan,
right,
which we don't even understand,
right,
and fix the problems there? So I think I really wish that we defined our role in the world this way, that we could demonstrate that liberal values — we can have an argument about what liberal is — but we could demonstrate that liberal values could provide the basis for a free society that was responsive to human needs and also paid proper attention to God's creation.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could do that here, then arguably we would be providing an example that other countries and other cultures might find useful. But that would not be shoving it down their throat. But that's not the American way. You know, the American way is to have this conviction that we are summoned, that we have a mission, and that the mission requires activism, and activism all too often ends up being synonymous with using military power.
You mentioned the end of the Cold War should have been a time for our repentance. What are you referring to specifically there?
Oh, I'm referring to the Vietnam War.
Right.
Killed what? Something like 2 million?
Yeah.
I'm referring to the nuclear arms race, which it was simply, on the one hand, enormous waste of resources, but also posing a danger to humankind itself. I'm talking about the misuse of the CIA,
mm-hmm,
in undermining governments and organizing coups. Again, I'm giving you a set of sins on our part.
Sure.
And I don't want anybody to think that I'm trying to excuse the sins on the other side,
sure,
which were at least as great, if not greater. But the Cold War was not a particularly happy story.
Right.
And I think that Americans have not yet absorbed the tragedy of the Cold War, because we've tended to think that there was a happy ending back when the Berlin Wall and
right,
Berlin Wall fell in 1989, and therefore there's no real requirement for us to think more deeply about it.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's what happened in 1865. You know, we won the Civil War, and everybody in the North said, "Yay, we won! The Union is saved."
Right.
And it took a pretty long period of time for us to recognize the limits on that victory, and in particular, the limits on that victory that left the freed slaves,
right,
in a desperate situation in which they did not enjoy any meaningful freedom. So we had to rethink the Civil War and rethink the Civil War's aftermath, and that took a long time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been, I think there's been a lot of repentance over Vietnam and the CIA, though, don't you think? I mean, the Church Commission, or do you think that's simply not well integrated into most American self-understanding?
I think I'm talking about what is the collective consciousness of the American people.
Yeah.
Because that forms the raw material for,
sure,
our politics.
Right. Right.
It's that our politicians address when they say, here's how I think the country should, the course I think the country should follow,
mm-hmm,
going forward. And, you know, there is an awareness that the Vietnam War was a tragedy, and maybe more than a tragedy. You can make a case it was a crime. There is an appreciation that, I don't think there's much appreciation of how the Vietnamese people suffered, but there's an appreciation of our losses, killed, mm-hmm, wounded, damaged veterans.
Sure.
But it doesn't seem to me that, you know, if we had a true appreciation of what a catastrophe Vietnam was, I don't think we would have plunged into Iraq in 2003,
mm,
for example.
Okay.
There would have been a greater sort of sensitivity that, hey, wait a second, this that this thing could go badly wrong. Maybe we should stop and think a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. What would you like to see? You've written on the Middle East at length. What do you think we should do to help get us beyond the what appears to be just deadlock in the Middle East? Is there anything we should do? I mean, it's always talked about that we should do, the United States should do something to help Middle East peace. And we have,
yeah.
you know, the Camp David Accords is held up as glorious.
I think point number one is, to put it crudely, it's their problem.
Yeah.
It's their problem to find a way to mutually coexist, whether we're talking about Israel and the Palestinians, or whether we're talking about Saudi Arabia and Iran, and we should give up the illusion that somehow we're going to be able to determine the outcome of those competitions and conflicts.
Right.
That'd be point number one. Point number two is that we should recognize that our military efforts have largely failed, and we should demilitarize U.S. policy in the region. I mean, I'm in favor of getting the troops out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not waste any more lives.
Yeah.
And then I think the third thing is to reposition the United States so that it does become genuinely an honest broker. You know, we have purported to be an honest broker in the Israel-Palestine conflict. The reality is we've been aligned with Israel, and we've been Israel's supporter and protector all along. No less important, I think. You know, we are the principal sponsor and protector of Saudi Arabia, and we define Iran as an adversary, as an enemy. I think that, too, needs to be revisited.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand why we view Saudi Arabia
as an ally.
Quote-unquote friend.
Yeah.
And I think we'd be better off taking a more balanced position between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Neither one are our friends. But a more balanced position where we could perhaps, from a diplomatic perspective, have some positive effect in educating both sides that continuing this conflict is not in anybody's interest.
I mean, let's stay with that a little bit. Saudi Arabia, a nation which is unlike us in so many ways. Why do we consider them friends? I mean, the Saudi money was going into building mosques in the United States, in which textbooks were found saying democracy was a form of a blasphemy. I mean,
I think the answer is that, inertia more than anything else.
Okay.
I mean, the U.S.-Saudi relationship began at the end of World War II. Franklin Roosevelt really initiated it. At that point, of course, Saudi Arabia was an exceedingly backward country, but it had lots and lots of oil. At that point, U.S. policymakers perceived that U.S. oil resources were going to run out, that oil was going to be crucially important to the industrial world,
yeah.
and therefore they wanted to establish this relationship so we would have assured access to Saudi oil. That's where it started. It evolved over time in many ways, so that here we are in 2019, and we don't need their oil.
Right.
We have plenty of fossil fuels we can access, but there's no inclination to sort of revisit the premises of the U.S.-Saudi relationship, and there needs to be.
Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today, and look forward to talking to you again. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Andrew Bacevich, president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, author of America's War for the Greater Middle East, and upcoming, The Age of Illusions, How America Squandered Its Cold War Victory.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Welcome to a St. Nicholas Minute. Why does St. Nicholas deliver gifts under the cover of night? Well, that tradition began in my hometown of Patara in Asia Minor when I came to the help of a destitute man who had 3 grown daughters. He was so poor that he could barely feed them. Because he was so desperate, he was tempted to sell them into slavery. Then I remembered the words of Jesus who said, "When you give to the poor, don't let your left hand know what the right hand is doing." And so I put together 3 bags of gold coins and tossed them through the window at night to help them. That was the first of my midnight visits. And that's the reason to this very day, even when I'm dressed as Santa Claus, I still deliver gifts under the cover of night. May the same love, joy, and peace that the angels proclaimed on that first Christmas animate your own heart to give hope to those most in need. For Christ is born. Glorify Him.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
During the 2 days of the Democrat presidential candidate debates held this past July at the Fox Theater in Detroit, the city and its police force imposed draconian restrictions that prevented anyone with a message that conflicted with the policies of the Democrat candidates, particularly messages that conflicted with the candidates' radical pro-abortion policies, from reaching the debate participants and attendees. As a result, we sued the city and several of its police officers and the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Michigan for silencing the speech of our pro-life clients, Created Equal and its co-founder, Mark Harrington. Indeed, the right to freedom of speech enshrined in the First Amendment is not a right to catharsis. It is a right to meaningfully express one's message in order to influence public opinion and to affect public policy. Not surprisingly, the liberal city of Detroit imposed restrictions that had the intended effect of sanitizing and cleansing the areas immediately in front of and adjacent to the Fox Theater of any messages that were critical of the Democrat presidential candidates and the positions and policies they supported. In particular, these instructions ensured that our clients' message, specifically including their pro-life signs, would be hidden from the CNN camera shots, the viewers of the debates, the candidates, and those who attended the Fox Theater for the debates. Our Constitution does not permit such treatment. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. During the early 1980s, I remember a debate and panel discussion in which Richard John Neuhaus, Cal Thomas, and a number of others participated. It was over the question, this was the debate question, on balance, is the United States of America a force for good or ill in the world? I can remember thinking at the time, what kind of nation are we that there are large segments out there that actually think America, on balance, is a force for evil? Well, that was, as I said, the early 80s. Ronald Reagan had just been elected, and we were emerging out of a time of national disgrace, national doubt, and navel-gazing. We had just withdrawn from Vietnam a few years before. We had Watergate and what appeared to be the very confused and lackluster years of Jimmy Carter and the Iranian hostage crisis. And Reagan was, I believed, a breath of fresh air. He reminded us that our opposition to the atheistic, totalitarian, communist menace was a duty that we shouldn't shirk. He made us realize there was no moral equivalence between the Soviet Union and the United States. I still believe that. But I also knew then and now that we weren't without our own dirty tricks during the Cold War. I mean, I can remember when I first learned that President Eisenhower had lied to us about the downing of Francis Gary Powers. He was the American pilot whose CIA spy plane was shot down while flying a reconnaissance mission in the Soviet Union. It was the famous 1960 U-2 incident. The U.S. government, I was 9 years old at the time, and I can remember it. We forget that at one time, before the rise of the Internet, kids actually participated. They didn't understand a lot, but they participated in adult conversation. So I remember this, and I remember not believing that Eisenhower had really lied to us. And when I finally realized he had, I thought, well, it's because he was under duress. You know, as a Catholic boy, I knew if it was under duress, it wasn't mortal sin. I don't remember when it was that I first heard about John Kennedy's womanizing, but I think it was early adolescence. And at that, I didn't believe it. Later, I believed it, but I was appalled even more by the reporters who refused to report on it. I mean, they said they didn't want to tarnish the office of the presidency. I think the truth is they didn't want to be denied White House access. And then Lyndon Johnson lied about the Gulf of Tonkin. I believed the lie for years afterwards. And though I was a 60s kid, I never protested the Vietnam War. When my number came up in the draft, I went down for my physical and would have gone if the U.S. had sent me. As it turned out, I got a 4F deferment. But I continued to personally support the war in conversation. When the Watergate controversy began, I, like most Americans, thought it was a third-rate burglary. The president had nothing to do with it. And I was right. The president didn't have anything to do with it. He had everything to do with the cover-up, though. And it took me until Alexander Butterfield and John Dean to finally realize that he was, in fact, a liar. I've been slow to come around to the failings of American leadership. I didn't know about Pinochet, and I didn't know about Teddy Roosevelt's attitudes towards Spain or the Philippines. I didn't know about Kermit Roosevelt's efforts to oust the Iranian duly elected president, Mossadegh, which ended up becoming a major grievance that drove the Iranian students to take over the U.S. embassy, by the way, which was an attack on U.S. soil. That's our soil. That's American soil. It was a complete betrayal of diplomatic etiquette. One of the reasons I was late coming around to acknowledge our nation's checkered history is that many of those who do become aware of America's failings and connivings speak as though they've come to believe that on balance, the United States is no longer a force for good in the world. I'm not one of those. I still think the United States of America on balance is a force for good in the world. I also think we need to be more honest in what we have failed to do. And we have failed in Afghanistan. I mentioned Douglas Loop, Lieutenant General, 3-star general. He was called the War Czar because he occupied a senior advisory position responsible for overseeing the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. President Obama asked him to stay on as his special assistant and senior coordinator for Afghanistan and Pakistan. In 2015, he made it clear, what are we trying to do here? Now, this is the guy who was the Afghan war czar during the Bush and Obama administrations. And he asked reporters, what are we trying to do here? We didn't have the foggiest notion of what we were undertaking. Now, if the Afghan war czar doesn't understand, I think you can rest assured no one understands. And by the way, Lute is a retired, like I said, U.S. Army Lieutenant General and had high appointments. He was also a combat veteran. Some people want to know why I haven't been spending time looking at this impeachment issue. Because, just as with the Russia collusion story, it was clearly a dog and pony show destined for failure from the beginning. Look, Democrats knew from the beginning they would never get a conviction in the Senate. This is all for show. I don't want to get into what the president said or didn't say. You can all read it for yourself. But the point is, the whole focus on impeachment was destined from the very beginning to fail because there was utterly no way the Senate Republicans were going to convict their own president. I mean, the Senate Republicans didn't even have the nerve to convict President Clinton. They're certainly not going to convict their own president. That's just not something political parties do. They can be persuaded by clear evidence, as they were at the time of Nixon, that Nixon had lied. But even that, it took a long time for Senate Republicans to come around. And it was only after Barry Goldwater convinced Nixon that he had no more support that Nixon finally resigned. Andrew Bacevich, who I just talked to, describes himself as a Catholic conservative. He's a longtime military man from West Point, served in Vietnam, served in the first Gulf War. In fact, he was an early public critic of our policy in Iraq. I wasn't at the time. I supported George W. Bush. Andrew's only son, Andrew Jr., disagreed with his father. He joined the army, was sent to fight in Iraq, and was killed by a bomb while on patrol in Iraq. And his father knew. He'd been in combat himself, and he knows the amount of chance involved in those situations. No matter how careful you are, no matter how well prepared you are, bad things happen in combat. You know, I found myself among conservatives a good part of my adult life, and we have been big on the virtue of patriotism, and that is love of our country. And there tends to be, in conservative circles, has been, might be changing, an unwillingness to criticize those in authority. We basically understand the importance for authority and order. And for Christians, I think this is especially true. Many of us believe that the United States of America had an exceptional origin and destiny. I've done interview after interview and commentary after commentary on the way Christian faith has been a lively force for good in our American history. And I think it's crazy that writers can write a history of the United States without acknowledging the strong role that the Christian faith has played in our victories. But it also has gotten in the way. For instance, we take a look at what happened during the time of the Civil War. You know, we sing Julia Ward Howe's Battle Hymn of the Republic as a victory song of the North over the South. But we don't remember that the Civil War should never have been necessary for a population that had been so evangelized as the United States. The failure was so great that it split Christian denominations. Methodists, Presbyterians, Baptists, and others were torn apart, and they had southern and northern branches of their churches. Now, thankfully, by the grace of God, Catholics did not enter into any formal schism over here. But in truth, Catholics in the South basically shared the assumptions about the war with their non-Catholic southern neighbors. And Catholics in the North generally adopted the same coloration as the non-Catholic members of the North. Now, Catholics at that time were not of such number that we could have had much of an influence anyways. Let me give you one small example of what happens when the end justifies the means and nothing matters but the end. And in this case, it would have been abolition. On his way to the Harper's Ferry raid, John Brown's men stopped a Baltimore and Ohio Railroad train that was headed for D.C. Now, Brown let the train continue eventually, but during the efforts to stop the train, his men shot a baggage handler at the town's train station who refused to cooperate with these abolitionists in their plan. The man they shot was a free black man who refused to dance to the orders of the abolitionists. They shot to death one of the very people the abolitionist movement said they were trying to help. In my mind, the abolitionists were ultimately a destructive force, driving people to war. Now, they're not the only destructive force. Southern intransigence needs to be considered. But the abolitionists believed that we could solve this issue through force or violence, when in fact the issue required much more patient, careful, and cooperative solution. In fact, we saw that in England, where they abolished the slave trade and slavery without the kind of shedding of blood that we did here in the United States. And that's one of the reasons is that the English abolitionists, like William Wilberforce, were very much rooted in an understanding of the gospel. This is how I read it. For the abolitionists here in the U.S., any gradual steps would have been compromise, would have been evil. And that attitude in Lincoln's election led the South to believe that war was the only solution. Now, war is sometimes necessary. Our original military attack on Afghanistan and the Taliban, I believe, was just, but we're still there. 157,000 people have lost their lives, $950 billion to $2 trillion. And what have we accomplished? We haven't established a stable government there. There's not a well-developed, self-sufficient military. We haven't ended the opium trafficking. And, you know, the Taliban is still at work. Unintended consequences almost always flow from the use of force. Well, the Civil War in the U.S. and subsequent legislation did deal a death blow to slavery as an institution. It wasn't the end of black misery. The unintended consequences were terrible. Little thought had been given ahead of time to how to integrate free blacks into Southern society. We ended up with the rise of the Klan. We had Reconstruction, not a happy thing for former slaves. Those of us who love this country need to love it enough to tell the truth about its failings. And we're responsible citizens of the U.S. We're also faithful disciples of another kingdom. And we do regularly in our lives examination of conscience, confession of sin. We bring forth the fruits of repentance. We do that with our lives. We do it when our families become dysfunctional. We need to do it when our nation is dysfunctional.
You don't think it'll happen to you twice. First, it was a fire. That agent was right there and helped me rebuild. Then the tornado destroyed everything again. Both times, my independent agent and auto owners took care of me like someone takes care of family.
For whatever lies ahead, we're always there. Auto Owners Insurance.
For your no-obligation quote, please call Choice Insurance at 734-641-4200.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Thanks to all of you who have been supporting Ave Maria Radio over the years. We did, however, fall short during our last drive. So unless we remedy this deficit, our operations will be limited next year. Please, don't let that happen. Catholic Radio has been one of the most stable and fruitful lay-led movements since the Second Vatican Council. So please, go online to AveMariaRadio.net, hit the donate button, and renew your partnership in this work of the gospel. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
If you or someone you love has dementia with Lewy bodies, the following information may be for you. Right now, University of Michigan medical researchers at Domino's Farms are seeking participants for a research study of a new investigational drug for people who have dementia with Lewy bodies. Please call us at 734-936-1035 to learn more about participating in this research study. This study is for people who have dementia with Lewy bodies and are age 55 or older. Participants must have a partner or caregiver to assist during the study. This study involves up to 9 clinic visits over a period of up to 5 to 6 months. There is no charge to participate, and compensation may be available to qualified participants. So, if you or a loved one has dementia with Lewy bodies, please consider joining this important research study. Call us today at 734-936-1035. That's 734-936-1035. 734-936-1035.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta, thanking you for being with me. Follow up on our conversations today by going to AveMariaRadio.net. We'll have, of course, any books that we mentioned in the program will be available for you there, including Tom Holland's Dominion, and we'll also have books by Andrew Basevich there, excuse me. Again, AveMariaRadio.net, or go to the Cresta Guest Archives, where you're going to be able to pick up follow-up information on our conversations. And now, as I go off the air, we got a powerful Catholic Answers Live edition coming up. Father Paul Keller joining Tim Staples, open forum. So make sure you stay tuned. And tonight, it's Mother Angelica Live Classics on EWTN Radio and Television. You may be aware that this week we begin the Antiphons. These are the short chants that used during Vespers to help prepare us for the final days of Advent. They're really rich in scripture, they're rich in history, rich in tradition. We're going to look at how they serve as catechesis of salvation history. We're going to be joined by Gregory DePepa. Also, Sam Phillips continues our Where Things Are Going Right with a look at what's happening at Christendom College. And let me remind you that all that we talk about on this program does invite you to go deeper into the conversation, and I would urge you to take advantage of the extra resources that we prepare for the program. They're available at AveMariaRadio.net. Just go to the Cresta Guest Archives there, and you'll be able to pick up follow-up articles. We'll have the Washington Post expose of our problems in Afghanistan there, as well as other articles or columns by Andrew Basevich. So, I look forward to being with you tomorrow, and thank you. I'm Al Cresta, and this is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.